guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Say that more slowly because I'm stupid.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hi, Matthew. What do you got?
Hi. So Bill Belichick isn't a fan, or nobody's liking him right now in the clubhouse, it seems like. So why not send him to Cleveland with their second round pick and get their two first rounds and the fourth round and help it all build up that defense?
Right. How's the weed in Alaska this time of year, Matthew? Can you grow bud up there? Would you stop with that?
It's going to be cold.
The thing with this Belichick stuff, I'm on his side. I mean, the more I think of it, like, I think Brady has gotten a little out of line here at the end.
No, well, he's undermined the whole, you know, but by once your ego starts to get big, you undermine the operation.
I mean, I just think he's, and that's too strong. Like, he's not out of line. I just think he's grown a little entitled here late in the game. I think he's grown a little entitled and expects things, and, you know, I think he's appealing direct. He's going over Bill's head and appealing directly to the owner on stuff and getting it, you know, to which I would say to Robert, like, what are you guys doing? And I think Bill's been undermined here, and I think that Bill's system largely is the system you want to have. Like, I'll pick it apart and I'll second-guess things about it, but at the end of the day, he runs the show. He should run the show.
The coach has to have the power, Mike.
Especially with someone who's proven, like he has, and he is. And I think at the end of the day, his system is I do want a disciplined system. I do want the coach controlling the players, not the other way around. I mean, that's really the basic. That's the base of it. You don't let the players run the show. The coach runs the show, as long as the coach is qualified to do so. And that's really that's the crux of it. And I think Bill's been adamant about that. And I think that if there's an issue here between the players and the coach, I would still defer to the coach. Now, that's not to say the coach has been perfect. He's let his ego get in the way, too. The Butler thing is the latest example. Like, that was bad form, man. But all this stuff about Guerrero, like, I'm with Belichick on that. I really am.
Well, look, and maybe this goes back to what Murray was saying in the wake of the Super Bowl, too. Maybe with all this crap going on, Bill's got to now dig in a little deeper and starts fighting on something he might not normally do, and Butler never gets in the game.
So, again, are you lying down on Murray's psychologist couch?
No, I'm just telling you that if you have all these spitting matches going on inside the walls, okay, if that's what this thing is about, you want me, let me have this. You want me, I'll show you guys. You think I don't have power? Let me reclaim some of my power. Now you've got a tug of war. And now you got people acting out of character and asking for things that they wouldn't normally ask for. And they're focused on their selfish interests more than they are the group interests. And so if all this is in Belichick's head while it's going on, and then Butler misses practice and he thinks, why should I play this guy this week? He's been sick. He doesn't look good. I don't want the matchups anyway. Sit your ass on the sideline. And then, so again, I'm trying to think it all out. I'm not saying that ultimately, you know, the Malcolm Butler thing was the straw that broke the camel's back. But Mike, when it deteriorates the way it did after that Butler decision, doesn't that tell you there's something going on in there?
Curran says the principal players are not happy with the atmosphere and climate.
I mean, think of the guys that lined up to take Butler's side in that thing.
So, I mean, I think you're right. I think those fault lines are real. I'm just saying, if the principal players are not happy with the atmosphere and climate, I don't think the atmosphere and climate's the problem. I think it's the principal players.
Now, Belichick was right on Guerrero. And look, part of the reason it worked here for as long as it did is because there was always clarity as to who was in charge. Bill makes the decisions. And if that started to get gray, well, then if those lines start to get a little rubbed out and erased, what do you think the players are going to do? They're going to start running, particularly the ones that have any kind of power. They're going to start undermining the coach. This is why Belichick is adamant about that part of it. He learned some of that from Parcells. Once that gets taken away from you, like, look out.
Pat in Fairhaven is a football thought for us. Hi, Pat.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. What do you got, Pat?
If the new pass interference penalty were to be put into place, I think anything that's under 2 minutes should revert back to the old penalty. If a receiver is going to catch, like, a 50-yard bomb at the end of the game, gets taken down, you know, it shouldn't be spotted 15 yards. It should be spotted 50 yards.
Let me give you the solution. What Pat is talking about is in competition committee right now at the NFL. Again, they've done this many times in the past because Mike Pereira used to propose this every year. But they're considering making pass interference a 15-yard spot penalty like they do in college. Okay? And now the caller is saying, well, what if there's, I'll just pick a better example for you. Caller, the Hail Mary. You're sitting at the, you know, Aaron Rodgers is sitting at the other 35-yard line, and he throws it up there to Rodney Rodgers, his tight end. Well, why don't you just tackle the guy? He has to, then Aaron Rodgers has to do it all again at the 50, right? So you can't have that, which I agree with. So now there's a simple solution. What does the NBA do?
Flagrant.
Flagrant one, flagrant two.
Right. I mean, you have a grade of foul that if you deem it to be deliberate interference, that it's a spot foul.
Right. So deliberate's one way to do it, or just use your head. You know, breakaway. You know, the Hail Mary situation. If just grade it out. If it's egregious.
Yeah, if someone's clotheslined.
If someone like is if someone's clearly open and the guy runs and just tackles him and never looks, never even pretends to look for the ball, just gives the penalty, then make it a spot foul. Everything else is 15. I mean, that seems pretty simple to me. I've told Pereira that every single time.
Yeah, it's like the graduated speed law. You know, once you start going 30 miles over the limit, you lose all defense, pal.
Flagrant one, flagrant two. But I would be all for them scaling back those pass interference rules. I mean, that's a good start. We're going to do some Red Sox this hour as well. I have a couple Bruins calls on the board, so why don't we just do them quickly here. Bert in the car on the Bs. Go, Bert. I'm sorry, Brett. Go ahead, Brett.
Brett, hey, Felger. I just wanted to call and say that you were a little wrong yesterday about something you said with the Rick Nash being a diva. So I played, minor pro in the U.S. here, and he's not a diva for not carrying his bag into the locker room. That's pretty standard procedure across the board when a guy signs or gets traded to a new team.
Okay, so your phone blows, but I knew this would happen. I read a Joe McDonald story in Boston Sports Journal about how Nash had the equipment people carry his bag into the room yesterday. McDonald wrote it and just sort of made a point of, wouldn't it have been a great statement if he carried his own bag into the room, just so I'm here to work, fellas. And I read it, and I said, this is sort of an example of what you deal with number one overall picks and blah, blah, blah. Nothing more than that. I wish I never said it because, again, you think he's a superstar because he won't carry his own bag? And is that the stupidest thing I've ever heard? Forget I said it. Forget I said it. I thought it was a good little detail, but apparently not. Okay? He's just there to work. He's just there to work. Hard-nosed guy. I don't care who carries his bag. Never mind. I'm sorry I brought it up. God.
Dope.
Stupid me. Read something. I actually got something, a little insight from inside, from in the hallway outside the locker room that no one else mentioned. Just a little detail that might make you go, well, that's kind of interesting, but no.
That's so dumb. Oh, you idiot. He carried his bag. He didn't carry his bag. You care about that, Felger?
Forget I mentioned it. Strike that from the record.
Moron.
You want Nash commentary? Listen to the promo that Jimmy put together for the station. Boy, did you make me sound like a honk today. Can we get that thing off the air, please? That thing's embarrassing. I take off my pants and pleasure myself over the Rick Nash trade the way Jimmy edited this thing down. It's ridiculous. Could you make me sound like a bigger honk on that thing?
I could have. I chose not to.
Oh, my God. I mean, I understand the play there. So then the Bruins hear and say, oh, they're saying nice things about us. Good. You know, like, that's smart. You're protecting.
You're welcome.
You're protecting me. Thank you. I get
business it. Business partnership.
But man alive. Like, I said more bad things about the trade than good.
I don't think you did.
Yeah, Felga, I just wanted to call and correct you about something you said yesterday.
Oh, but that promo.
Glorious.
Don't listen to that promo, please.
Promo.
Mike in Salisbury. Go, Mike.
Hi, guys. How you doing? I got one comment, one question, and just ask your opinion. I do believe, and I haven't up till this point, that Belichick has started the crack in the foundation. I do believe that there is an okay not playing a player, but not okay to leave a guy sitting on a sideline crying in front of 144 countries, and I'm happy the rest of the players backed him. That's that. On to the Bruins. I want just to you know to straight, Mike, because you're a hockey fan, have the Bruins improved or have they not? And one last question.
No, that's it. We got to go there. We got to stop there. They've improved this year for sure. This year for sure. That doesn't mean that Nash is going to show up. Their ceiling is higher. That's what. Their ceiling is higher. If Nash shows up and plays to his ability, they're much better. I mean, there's just no debating it. He's a much more complete, dynamic, impactful player than Ryan Spooner. And that's the only thing you traded off of this roster. You swapped out Spooner for Nash. So there's just... there's no debating that their ceiling is higher. I can't guarantee that Nash is going to deliver because he never really has in his career. And you gave up a first and an NHL defenseman, a future NHL defenseman for that. So you may not win the trade. That may not be good value at the end of the day. But if Nash plays the way he's capable and that gets more out of Krejci, oh, yeah. I mean, that's, yeah, no doubt about it. Get some Red Sox thoughts. We'll mix those in as well right after these words. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Blend for
sports drama.
We're gonna run it right down their throat.
Felger.
I'm a hypocrite.
Mass.
Who cares?
Felger and Mass. 98.5. The Sports Hub.
That's kind of, you know, with talking to Alex and stuff like that about going out there every day, and it's almost like a football has Monday night. They say Fenway, it's every night's like Monday night football over there, so I'm excited. You know, I love this game. I love to play in front of fans that are just as passionate and that love it just as much. It's exciting.
Okay, on J.D. Martinez, that's him talking about hitting at Fenway, playing at Fenway every night's Monday night football. Cool. Right, it's true. Jimmy Stewart forwards along from time to time. The Peter Gammons, is this a newsletter? Peter Gammon still writes.
He writes for The Athletic, which is a subscription-based service.
Okay, very good. He writes for The Athletic. So I don't get to read it, but whenever Jimmy forwards it along and I read his Red Sox stuff, I'm entertained by it. And I don't know where it comes from. And like, as I said to you in our email exchange, I think he's the next Boston media member, maybe after me. It's me and Gammon's neck and neck to be the next guy to get catfished. Like, I know it's past his time and he's not up with all the other stuff and blah, blah, blah. But when I read
I believe 75% of the catfish like Ron Borges.
When I read his stuff, I'm entertained. So he's talking about your big thing about Martinez's opposite field power. He says, so while Martinez's strength is power to right center field, that's his strength, power to right center field. And then he quotes Brad Ausmus, who said he's probably best suited for Yankee Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Former manager Brad Ausmus with Detroit. So while Martinez's strength is power to right center field, and depending on the climate, and then he writes in parentheses, the east wind can sometimes blow in off of Massachusetts Bay, cutting down balls to right center. And I just stop right there. I go, I miss Gammons. Who the hell refers to the ocean in Boston as Massachusetts Bay?
Last time I checked, it was Boston Harbor. Just me.
Or the ocean?
Yeah. Yeah. Blowing in off the Atlantic.
Or off the east?
Right. Massachusetts Bay.
It's a Massachusetts Bay colony?
Yeah.
Massachusetts
like,
Bay?
He's always written this way. He has a history of like also, you know, dropping things in that are totally unrelated that are bombshells. You know, depending on what happens in Philadelphia with the Juan Samuel situation. What? Like, what's that got to do with anything?
So while Martinez's strength is power to right center field, and depending on the climate, the east wind can sometimes blow in off of Massachusetts Bay, cutting balls down, hit to right center. He is a bona fide threat. 45 homers in 113 games last year. While in MLB StatCast leaders, get a load of this, Murray. He was second in the league in barrels.
Oh, like Donkey Kong.
Oh, yeah, you didn't hear.
Oh, very good, Murray. He was second in barrels, fourth in hard hit balls, and ninth in exit velocity.
Hmm.
Okay, so he has that going for him, and if that wind just stays calm off of Massachusetts Bay, you'll be all set. He's going to hit the bullpen's mass.
Be careful what you eat so you can control your exit velocity later. You gotta watch out for that lentil soup.
Gonna blast like a hydrant.
Not feeling so great. I got high exit velocity.
Ben Gammons writes a lot about the Red Sox's new approach, which I do find interesting, and I'm all about. All right? I find this interesting. He says, going back to when the current Boston ownership installed Theo Epstein, the Red Sox offensive game plan has been to get deep into counts, get the opposing bullpens into games in the middle innings, and beat up on middle relievers.
True.
But the game has changed, writes Gammons. Middle relievers today throw 94 to 98 miles an hour with matchups that are scripted before the games. He says the Astros were a contact and power team that led the majors in runs, and their approach was to hunt for pitches they hit best and hammer away regardless of the count. Gammons writes that last season Boston hitters swung at the fewest first pitches of any team. No crap. Bogarts swung at 29 first pitches all season. Think of that number. How many did he have? 500 plate appearances?
Oh, I bet you had more than that.
600 plate appearances? He swung at 29 first pitches all season.
This is the problem with Bogarts.
That is a staggering number to me. For instance, which is why they have him studying video from his days at AA when he was more aggressive and drove balls for power.
635 plate appearances last year.
635 plate appearances, and he swung at the first pitch 29 times. Oh, my God.
I mean, that's the thing, too. For a guy that takes the first pitch as much as he doesn't walk a ton. I mean, he isn't, you know, but anyway, keep going.
Gammons writes that, granted, Bogarts was bothered for more than 2 months in 2017 by a bad wrist, but his homers dropped from 21 to 10. He's got as much power as anyone here, says one coach. His hitting hands are magical. His power is tremendous. So the new approach here is hunt pitches no matter when it is. Don't grind every at bat like it's, you know, the seventh game of the World Series, which just from a fan standpoint, I am so looking forward to. Like I got, and oh, by the way, from the old school, I am someone who is into working counts and waiting for your pitch. In fact, the whole reason I was mercilessly attacked by the BBWA in the first place, the whole argument with McAdam and Mr. Baseball started with me saying, does Nomar have to swing like an a-hole every time he's up at the plate?
Right, he used to hack at the first pitch constantly.
Can't Nomar and this team take a few pitches? And that's when McAdam viciously attacked my character and called me Mr. Baseball. But that's where that whole thing starts. So I am from the old school someone who thinks you should take pitches. But it's gotten stupid with this Red Sox team.
Well, so, but this is the whole point.
It's gotten stupid.
Well, you take it too far. And so what do pitchers do? If you're going to take the first pitch all the time, what's the pitcher going to do? So fastball right down the middle, strike one.
Strike one.
So then you have to start swinging again. This is the thing is they, you know, it goes, this type of stuff tends to shift from one end of the spectrum to the other. And so now you've had John Henry talking about the fact that their approach wasn't right. So he blasting the hitting coach. And also, when Gammon says to hunt for pitches, who's he quoting? Do you remember?
Well, I didn't they say that in Houston last year?
Cora said it when they hired him. Right?
Oh, so, yeah, sure, right.
So to me, this is at least you know that he's been talking to Cora, so keep going.
Well, so Gammon ties us into J.D. Martinez. Last season, Martinez had an OPS of 1.175, 1,175 when he hit the first pitch. He had an OPS of 1,768 when he swung 1-0. That is precisely what the Sox are looking for in the middle of the order. With Betts, Bogarts, Andrew Benintendi, Ramirez, Moreland, Pedroia, etc., etc., Devers, Vasquez, Bradley, and a healthy Blake Swihart around him. That is what they're looking for, everybody.
Right, so the first pitch of 1-0, meaning when he swung at the first strike that he saw, right? Whether it was the first pitch or the second, because 1-0, you're ahead, and now you go, okay, he doesn't want to go 2-0. The other one to look at would be 2-1 or 3-1, and you're in hitters' counts. And they Bogarts in particular, get behind constantly. Constantly. But, you know, keep going.
So I just found that part, you know, if this approach, I think it the Red Sox thing about taking pitches, working into bullpens, walks as good as a hit. I mean, that's Billy Bean, Moneyball. It was a huge trend in the league a decade ago, two decades ago. The Red Sox were finally, you know, got up with everybody and did it as well as anyone. Time has come. It's time now to evolve to a more balanced approach and it's not all about working counts. It's not all about getting into the bullpen. It's about actually hitting the baseball. And so from a strategic standpoint, I agree with it. But also fan standpoint, it should also help our viewing experience. We're not every at-bat just the battle of Gettysburg. It's just a grind into the dust.
Yes, it's like anything, it's about situational play. That's what it is. So you say our philosophy is this. What if the pitcher starts throwing strike one all the time? Is your philosophy the same? To just sit back? Or do you adapt and adjust and then start swinging at the first pitch so you can control the at-bat?
Gammon's writes that the Red Sox can be really good, but there are lingering issues from last season. It was ugly in the clubhouse at times, most notably David Price's well-publicized tiff with Dennis Eckersley. I think that's all in the past, says Price, ever considerate ever considered a model teammate, writes Gammon's, and now trying to reach out to the media. Gammon says Price has been reaching out to the media. Interesting. Porcello, who may carry the largest leadership mantle of the pitchers, says, quote, we have to look in the mirror and make it right. We have to be accountable, and we've talked about it. We're playing in Boston, and we have to stop worrying about what people say or write. I keep saying, give everyone in the media a chance. They have a job to do. Treat people with respect, and you may get it back. I don't know about that. How about just ignore the noise? Just ignore the noise. Listen to music on the way into the stadium, for God's sakes. Turn off your Twitter mentions. Just ignore the noise. Simple.
I'll still believe it with these guys when they actually do it when they're losing.
Pedroia has actively echoed Porcello's thoughts. Bradley says, just don't listen. Don't let it affect your game. Yes. Right. Listen to music. Betts, Benintendi, Devers, Vasquez, Swihart have so much fun, they act as if they're back in teenage mode, writes Gammons, which unfortunately you see with win, dance, and repeat. Anyway, Gammon says, but get off to a mediocre start, and it will take maturity to blot out the noise.
Bingo.
The Yankees got the offseason publicity because of Stanton, but the Red Sox are perceived around the game as George Steinbrenner's Yankees. Remember, Boston has the highest payroll in the game at $232 million. $35 million more than the Yankees and Dodgers. And the Red Sox can't add during the season. If they cross the $237 million plateau, they lose draft choices and international pool money, and their tax rate goes to 62.5%.
Correct. But they can add. They just have to stay under the 237.
That, says one club official, isn't happening. So while I think the luxury tax implications to this point have been overplayed, that super luxury tax threshold that I just mentioned, that one's real.
Yeah, they won't go over that one. No, but
So they can't add, meaning you've got to trade money to get money. You've got to give it, this is so you can't gamble his right, so you can't purely add.
No, but I think they're going to move money before the end of camp. Might not be anything huge, but like, I don't know. You know, what's Brock Holt? $2.5 million or something? $2 million? You clear him out of there and you get rid of some other money, and all of a sudden you're $12 million under the cap.
Anywho, I still think that that's, you know, that's telling. You have some work to do if you want to add during the season.
Yes, they do. They're close.
You can't just strictly add. So anyway, I still enjoy reading Gammons whenever you put that in front of me.
Yeah, I could do without the wind blowing in off of
Massachusetts Bay.
Like, spare me the meteorology. Just give me the baseball. And I told you, I also, you know.
And that and J.D. Martinez is second in barrels.
So I want to see him hit the ball into the bullpens. I told you, this is a big thing for me. I want to see it.
Felger and Maz.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Maz.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
Eric and Douglas. Go ahead, Eric.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a quick point, and I just wanted to say maybe I'm too positive because I grew up during the Jose Offerman years and the John Burkett signings, you know, when we had a top six payroll and not top one anymore. But if you think about it, we have just as bright a future as anybody in baseball, and the only difference between us and the Yankees is the farm system. Dabrowski really hasn't done that bad of a job besides the Travis Shaw trade.
Okay, boy, you just all over the map there. I can't tell you guys. Seriously, the Jose Offerman era?
Yeah, the only difference is the farm system? He makes it sound like it's a small thing. It's huge.
That was not a coherent take. I'm just going to leave it to the side. Alan in Florida, I know, will give us a coherent take. Go ahead, Alan.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I happen to, maybe it's my age, I love Gammons. To me, he's 1, 2, and 3. I wanted to talk to a little bit. Casper was on last week, made a statement. How come it's okay when the NBA tanks, people say something, and when it happens in baseball, no one says anything? And I think it's the exact opposite. If a baseball team came out and did what Mark Cuban did, my God, there'd be a federal investigation on this.
No. If they said what he said, there would be. But teams have done it. Teams have done it worse.
Well, they do it. But for instance, Houston lost 111 games. They didn't bench Jose Altuve. He played. I mean, they stunk, and you knew they were tanking, but they weren't losing intentionally.
Alan, I think they had a payroll of, like, was it $18 million or $8 million or something like that?
I mean, it was absurd. It was under 30, I think.
Right. The Marlins this year could set a record for losses. I mean, my God. I mean, they don't have major league players on the team. But they're still, I mean, Mattingly isn't going to say, you know, strike out. I mean, Cuban is more or less saying, I didn't play. This guy didn't play. I mean.
You can't say it. I mean, it's right. You can't say it.
No, you can't say it. And nothing is, you know, nothing seems to be happening to him. Everyone loves Mark Cuban.
Oh, no, he's going to get.
He's a brilliant guy. I like him myself.
He's going to get fined, Alan. Did you have something else?
Yeah. I wanted to talk a little bit about Martinez. And his power is to right center. I just think it's going to lengthen the lineup. And, I really, really, really believe they're going to compete. If Price, to me, the key to the whole team, believe me or not, right now is Price. Because if Price can pitch like a number one and he's a number two, I mean, who's the Yankees other than Severino? Do they have a number one pitcher?
Well, they have Severino and Tanaka.
Yeah, well, what's wrong? What do you mean other than Severino? What are we going to erase him from the equation too? Like he doesn't exist? So, look, I'm not telling you that the Yankees rotation is better than the Red Sox, because I don't think it is. I think the Red Sox is better. But, you know, the Yankees is better than people think it is. So, now, with regard to Martinez, I told you, I want to see him hit the ball into the bullpens. I want to see him be able to do it with regularity. But the power hitter in the middle of the line, if he comes anywhere close to doing what he did last year, the Red Sox will be in the thick of it for the division.
George in Rhode Island. Hi, George.
Yeah, I was listening to you guys last week when you were talking about the average time of games, and the Red Sox were like 15 minutes over the league average.
Yes.
And it goes right back to what you guys were talking about earlier about them taking pitches all the time. So if Bud Light would quit going to the players' union, just go to the umpires and tell them call more strikes, and the pace of play would pick up.
No question. I think that the whole approach of grinding every at-bat into the dust and trying to get into bullpens and taking pitches and grinding has ground the whole sport to a stop. Has been one of the things that have ground it to a stop. So if the Red Sox are going to be one of these teams that start to go in the other direction of being more aggressive, it'll only help. It's a win on all sorts of levels.
So do you think they're willing to?
I think that they're doing it because I think they'll hit more home runs and hit better. They're not doing it to save the game. I just think that's going to be an ancillary benefit, is that the game's going to move quicker.
Right. No, what I'm saying, though, is I'm talking about the approach of the hitters. Do you think that they are willing to change their approach?
I think you're dubious. You have a quote that you want to give?
I am dubious, because I look at Bogaerts and I say, you know, again, remember, Bogaerts came up sort of in the Epstein era, and Gammons talked about in that column, the whole Red Sox culture, offensively, then was to grind at bats. Remember when Bogaerts came up? What was it? The patience, look at the pitches he doesn't chase, all of that. So now all of a sudden they want to turn him into something different or change the whole approach. So A, I question whether he'll buy in. He's one. Another guy I question who'll buy in is Ben Attendee. And this brings me back to a comment I saw early in camp, and I wrote it down, and it got stuck in my drafts in my mailbox. Okay, and I stumbled upon it the other day again and went, ooh, that's right. This comment from Ben Attendee, he was asked about the new hitting coach, Tim Hyers, who is preaching aggressiveness, launch angle, uppercuts, let's get the ball in the air. Okay? Here's what Ben Attendee said. I'm familiar with some of the stuff he preaches on. I don't know. It's a quick way to score runs, and last season the numbers speak for themselves. We didn't hit that many home runs, but we still won 93 games. There are different ways to win baseball games. I saw that comment and said, Ben Attendee doesn't want to change. He wants to keep doing it the way he's doing it. And Bogaerts is another one. And these are the young core players. Betts, I don't know about. We'll see. But between Bradley, Betts, Bogaerts, all I've heard them say when they've come into camp is, well, we won 93 games last year. You know, we won 93. Did you guys know we won 93? By the way, let me remind you, we won 93. It's not like we won 75. And here's what I would say to them. So what? What does 93 do for you if you get your ass kicked in the first round of the playoffs? It doesn't matter. 93 to 87, irrelevant. If you're not winning in the postseason, it goes out the window. If the lineup can't do damage in the postseason and pitchers don't fear you, who cares how many regular season games you win? The thing that bugs me about the young guys on the Red Sox, the millennial Red Sox, is they somehow think that 93 is enough. Good enough. I gave you 93. Where's my money? No. I want titles. It's world titles. It's not 93 wins. It's world titles. Don't you get that? Like, the 93 is enough. Again, this millennial mentality. No, look what I gave you. I gave you a 93. I should get something for that. You don't get jack. Win the championship. It's not about the stupid-ass 93 wins. Oh, God, that mentality. If one more of them talks about we won 93 games last year, I'm going to lose my mind if I haven't lost it already.
Well, the owner did it. The owner said it, too.
Good point.
The owner did, didn't he?
Yes. Yes. And I see it. I said, it's not about the 93 wins. Good. But the young guys in particular, can one of the veteran guys pull inside and say, 93 doesn't mean jack. It doesn't mean jack. Big deal. We're 1-6 in the playoffs the last 2 years. If one more, again, the millennial Red Sox. That's what they are, the millennial Red Sox. Some veteran person there, some veteran player who's actually won something, not that they have any of those either, other than Pedroia. One of those guys needs to say, I'm not in it to win 93 regular season games.
What happened to you? 93 wins got us the division last year.
Oh, God, I can't tell you. Again, when I stumbled it, and this is a couple weeks old, this comment. I almost lost my mind when I read it. I said, ooh, that's not good. What the hell has Andrew Benintendi accomplished that a hitting coach comes in, who was on a World Series team last year, by the way, that a hitting coach comes in and he can blow him off? Screw you. You haven't done jack. None of you guys have done jack yet. So shut up and win something before you start telling me that you have the answers, because you don't. I'm done.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's Felger and Mazz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mazz.
Celtics dominant in the first half into the third quarter, building a 28-point lead at one point. They stumble towards the finish line, but it is more than enough tonight. They hand the Grizzlies their 10th consecutive loss. They stay a half game behind the Raptors for the Eastern Conference lead and get their 43rd win of the year. The final score, Boston 109, Memphis 98.
Did you end with 43 wins to begin the year, Miss?
They did, yeah.
I don't know.
Are you going over?
Well, no, they just 43 was last night.
Yes, no, no, I'm aware of that. Yeah, they hit the number last night.
No, but you revised that upward, obviously.
I think I went to 48.
Where are you now?
53. I might have missed by 10.
So Celtics have straightened things out after the All-Star break. To me, they're not really the story. I mean, it's good. They were listing going to the All-Star break. Marcus Smart came back. I think that made a factor, obviously. The coach got on him a little bit. I think that's been a factor, and they've beaten up three bad teams, and so they're off and running. Fine. But it's results around the league that I think are a little more telling, and Maz made a good point. The Lakers win again last night. The Lakers have won three straight with the mouthy little peanut there, Murray, sorry. They are now in the 10th lottery position and dropping. And they're not really close to the bottom five, folks. Memphis, that you saw last night, they have 41 losses in the five spot. Right now, Memphis is in the five spot with 41 losses. The Lakers have 34. They're seven losses behind. And
with 22 games to go.
The Lakers aren't getting into the bottom five. Now, maybe the ping pong balls will bounce their way.
Correct. So it's the only shot you got now.
So it doesn't mean that can't land there. You just have to win the lottery. The ping pong balls have to beat the odds. It's not the Lakers are not going to start in the bottom five in that lottery. They're not.
You have to win the lottery and not be number one.
Right. So you can only win second or third. So I don't know what the odds there are. I mean, so if someone wants to run the odds. To be in the top three right now, the Lakers to be in the top three are 4%. Okay, at the 10th lottery position, to be in the top three, that is 4%. I don't know what it is for top five. If some nerds want to go at it, go at it. You tell me, starting in the 10th lottery position, what are the odds that you land two or three? Two, three, four, or five. I'm sorry. That's where it conveys for the Celtics. Two, three, four, or five.
Right, but I think the lottery's only done for the top three spots.
Bingo, bingo, bingo.
Right, so it means you got to hit the ping pong balls for two or three. Because
you can't be fourth or fifth.
Right, because otherwise you are going to drop to at least seven or eight or
no,
whatever.
Seven. They only do the lottery for the first three picks. That's exactly right. So that's it for the Lakers. They're not going to finish four or five. They're not going to catch those teams.
Correct.
So the only way is to come out from outside the bubble.
And hit two or three.
And hit two or three. What are the odds there, nerds?
Oh, it's going to be like 2%.
Look it up. So, not good.
No, and look, to me, this is a bigger story than people want to admit. Because to me, this is the draft to be in. So you want to talk about that Jason Tatum deal and what a big payoff it was? And it was. Because Tatum alone is better than Fultz, and you get another crack at something, fine. You needed that pick to convey this year, though. To me, this draft is way better. From the basketball people I've asked, this draft blows away the draft next year. And it's usually the opposite. Well, next year's draft's better. Next year's draft's better. Uh-uh. Not this time. This draft is loaded. And it's loaded with big guys. You needed to be in the top five this year, and they're not going to be in there.
So, adding insult to injury, you know who is basically tied in the fifth spot?
Brooklyn.
They also have 41 losses. They also have two more wins. I'm not going to give. There's a whole bunch of teams between Phoenix at one and call it Chicago at eight. They're all between 44 and 40 losses. And then it drops off, and then you get like a whole other tier of teams. But Brooklyn is right in it to land in the top five in this draft, which, again, look, you got Kyrie Irving, so no one's second-guessing that trade. But there was a give there. There was a give.
Absolutely, there was a give. And again, I don't remember the timing of the deals, but Irving came after the draft, right? So was there any chance of giving him that Lakers pick instead of the Brooklyn pick? You follow me?
Well, yeah, but this is what I hear from the Green Team. Danny nailed it! Yeah, all year. But, you know, the Lakers are going to be in the light of the Nets are on the cut. No, just the opposite. Nope. Because this is what the Green Teamers have been pumping you. That Danny nailed it. He knew that the Nets were going to be worse than the Lakers, and the Lakers were going to be worse than the Nets, so he gave the Lakers pick and not the Nets pick, or blah, blah, you know, reverse that. I mean, you know what I'm saying. And it's worked out just the opposite.
Cleveland never would have done that, Maz. The Brooklyn pick was the main part of that deal.
No, I understand that. I'm saying, but was there any discussion at all about the Laker pick instead of the Brooklyn pick? Could they have done that?
I mean, even if there was, they probably would have laughed off the phone.
No. What I'm telling you is that the Celtics, the Green Teamers, have portrayed it as Danny nailed it. Danny knew what was going to end up the lower pick, and so he gave them Brooklyn, knowing that the Lakers pick would actually be more valuable.
Yeah, well, that's just stupid.
And it's going just in the opposite direction. He did not nail that. Brooklyn's going to end up with a higher draft position than the Lakers. The Brooklyn pick was more valuable than the Lakers pick.
Ainge has nailed a lot of stuff here along the way. He's nailed it. He nailed the Tatum full steal. Again, we'll see how it plays out in the long term.
What a great move that was.
But he got the better player and got the pick. But that pick right now is taking a hit. It's taking a major hit. The top 6, 7, maybe even 8 in this draft is really good. And there are big guys there, too. And the Celtics aren't going to be in there. They're not going to get the pick at all in the top part of this draft unless they make some sort of deal.
Okay, so there's that. There's your Celtics update. Here's a quick Bruins minute. Patrice Bergeron, broken foot, out 2 weeks. Concerned?
A little bit. Yep, a little bit.
Yeah, and I don't want him playing probably as long as you could possibly hold him out. Like, I just want him to be as fresh as possible for the playoffs. My biggest question coming out of this is, why did he play in Buffalo over the weekend? If they already knew there was the injury, why did he end up playing? Even if he wanted in, they should have held him out of that game.
So they said the x-ray showed no break, and then he came home for a further imaging, and that found a slight break?
I saw that too, yeah. To me, this is why Wingles is here.
They could have blown the medical stuff. That could have been a miss. It could be a thing that, well, these are slight hairline fractures that happen all the time. He took a shot off the foot. Happens all the time. You can play with it or not. And they get to a stage where they say, well, you know what, why don't we just rest it? This is why I'm not concerned. I'm actually partly relieved that that's all that it is, and it's not more, and he's not fighting through something lingering. It's a hairline fracture, or slight break. Bones heal. Meantime, there's 2 extra weeks where he's not going to get really hurt, 2 extra weeks where he's not going to get totally ground into the dust again, come back, maybe he's a little fresher for the playoffs because he's taken those 2 weeks off. He wasn't going to win the Hart. I don't care about the Hart. And so maybe it prevents them from winning the President's Trophy. Great.
Good.
I never wanted them to win that stinking thing. That's just an albatross across your neck. I want them to stay right there in that 2-3 spot where they are right now to face Toronto in the first round, and that's that.
As long as it is what they're telling us it is, which I have my doubts about.
Oh, you do?
I do a little bit because I say, so that's convenient. It's just a hairline.
Well, he took a shot off the foot. Happens all the time.
And then he also said ankle. When he said he was, they were clearing the puck out of the Maple Leaf zone. He was skating to the bench and he got hit on the ankle.
Okay, well, I didn't hear that.
So the comment I saw from him, he said ankle. So I hear that and go, well, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of weight on there in the playoffs. Like, don't get me wrong.
All I know is he played 20 minutes the next night.
Yes. He didn't play great, though.
Whatever injury he had, he played 20 minutes the next night.
I mean, but again, did he play well?
No, he looked slow.
I mean, I don't think he played well in the final two periods of the Maple Leafs game. None of them did. So I look at it and say, thankfully, it's February 27th and not March 27th. So in all probability, they got enough time. But I don't know. Your best player's got a crack in his ankle or his foot a month
heal before
the playoffs?
Those heal.
Do they?
They do. Sure.
In two weeks?
Ligaments, things like that? That's different. High ankle sprains? Now, if you're saying it's a high ankle sprain, well, we're talking about something totally different. But a little fracture?
What if it's a bone in the ankle?
I don't know, but I don't know, Dr. Maserati, I don't know. I know bones heal.
Dr. Howard.
Broken bones heal.
Dr. Fine.
The playoffs begin, call it April 11th. Last regular season game is April 8th. Okay, so the playoffs begin that week, Tuesday the 10th, Wednesday the 11th, something like that. Plenty of time. I'm not at this juncture concerned. I'm disappointed that we won't get a full Bruins team on Thursday against the Penguins. I was looking forward to that one. That was going to be a big boy matchup, still is. But without Bergeron, you lose a little bit of what you got there on Thursday against Pittsburgh.
Felger and Mazz, the Sports Hub.